Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by ACAST and available to all audio platforms.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne. It's the Scummy Mummies podcast. And we have...
I know that. They've already had the theme music and everything. Also, anyway.
I know, but it just felt like it was weird that we didn't say it.
Oh, okay. It's the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Thank you. No,
by me, Ellie Gibson. And Helen Thorne. A podcast is a bit like a radio show. Is that what we're... Okay, fine.
Yeah. It's in your phone. Yeah. As I tell my mum. It's like radio in your phone, mum.
And who's on? Now it's web. Now we've fucked up the intro.
Yes.
Who are you, guest?
Oh, gosh. I didn't know if I was supposed to talk, but I really enjoyed all of that. Hello, guest. I'm Sharifa.
Hello, Sharifa. I love that we're just going with Sharifa. It's like Cher, Madonna,
yeah, I'm like
just
Beyonce,
Sharifa.
But just Sharifa.
Beyonce, Sharifa. And why don't you... How would you describe yourself for the listener?
How would I describe myself? I hate this question. It's the worst question when someone's like, what's your favourite song? I don't know. All of them. How would I describe myself? I don't know. Can you describe me?
Well,
it makes my life much easier.
You are an internationally renowned model.
Oh, I did do that.
Supermodel.
Supermodel. 10 years.
Okay, I didn't do
modeling.
That.
International model. You're a fitness influencer. You're a champion for diversity.
Yeah.
You live in London.
I live in London.
And you're the face of Fitbit, Sharifa.
Oh, I am at the moment.
Excellent.
Because one of my favourite things is like going down the tube, and you know when you have to get, and there's one of those tube stations where you have to go on a sort of travelator to get from one bit to the other.
Mm.
And we're just on the travelator, and there's your face, Sharifa, bigger than my house. Just your face. And I always say to my kids, look, I know that lady, that's my friend. And they go... And don't care, mum. I mean, she looks fine, but she's, you know, they don't say she's not Beyonce, but I say she's like Beyonce.
Yeah,
and they
but definitely not the same. Yeah, well, that was nothing to do with Fitbit. That was just a personal advert for myself because I've been single for so long. So I just thought, you know, it's time to finally push the boat out. You know, they say make an effort.
Yeah.
So that was me making effort. I spent 150 grand and just getting a billboard up.
Good for you. I do always think of you and I wonder, is it weird? Like, have you ever been on a travelator? Like, you know, when it's really packed and you're having to like go very slowly past your own face with your own face, like
all the
with
time.
People coming the other way going, what the, am I on drugs? Am I having a nightmare? What is that?
All the time. But do you know what's even weirder is one time I was... One time, every good story starts like this. Eh? One time I was walking along Oxford Circus. I was in such a bad mood. You know, I've had such a bad day. Mm-hmm. I had like all the bags and I had like my trainers, my like ugly, awful trainers on, and I was covered in rain and I hated everything. And I was like, oh, I feel so awful. And I stopped to put my bags down next to this shop and I turned around and looked up behind me. And there's like, this amazing picture of this girl with like, she's this really nice afro. And she was like, she looked really like sexy and she's wearing like this bodysuit. And I was like, oh my God, I wish I could be like her. And then I looked closer and I was like, oh, that's actually me.
Just me on a different day.
I remembered that I shot this campaign for Primark, and it was the Valentine's lingerie campaign. And Primark have really nice marketing. I don't know if you've looked at their windows, but they have really lovely like creative team. So it was a particularly nice shoot. And I remember just looking up and being like, "Wow, I don't look like that." not even. And you know that sexiness. I was like giving out some sort of like sexiness that I do not give out day to day. I mean, I turned up here today with like soaking wet hair.
Yeah, but I had wet hair and so did Helen because we've all just got out of the shower, so it's fine. We're all a bit saggy. It's fine. My mother would be absolutely horrified if she was in here now.
You're
all wretched, effer cold.
No,
she still says that to me now. If she turns up and I'm in my own house with wet hair, she'll be like, "You'll catch a death of cold." I'm just be like, "Of course, she's fine. I'm not going to get TB. It's going to be okay, Mum. It's going to be okay." So, how did you get into modelling? Is that you sort of worked your app, or did you get spotted like Kate Moss in Croydon Nando's, whatever it was?
Did she?
I don't know if it was Nando's. Don't think Nando's.
It was Croydon though. I think she was Croydon. I think she was just walking through the salubrious streets of Croydon somewhere.
You're white. Yeah. Everyone else. Yeah.
You're white and thin. Congratulations.
You're a millionaire.
Yes. Strangely, I've been white and thin in Croydon many times. It's never happened to me back in the day.
Could have been you.
Yeah.
It's just because you had wet hair. They didn't see you.
I was just shivering. I have a big puffy coat on.
That's right. Lighting matches. Yeah. Stay warm.
That's right. Oh, yeah. What was your story, Shireen?
So, do you know what? I went through this phase in my life, which is so funny, because I haven't been through this phase since, where people just kept saying, you should really be a model. And I just kept being like, you know, I grew up in a town, I was saying earlier, I grew up in a very white town. As a brown girl, I was like one of the only brown people in my school.
Was it Norwich?
And it was actually a city, but you know, and
don't write in Norwich people, we all know what she means.
So I remember growing up in a place where people didn't consider me or girls that look like me to be attractive. I remember like never being the girl that anyone fancied at school. I was like the last person anyone would go for. I was bigger. I was all these things. So you kind of grow up. I think when you grow up like that, you maintain this mindset of like, well, I'm just like the chubby, unattractive one. So I went to drama school, and I remember I started in my second year of drama school, I started getting like people just going, you know, and then one day you should be a model. And I just kept being like, who are they talking to? Is it like, who should be a model? I'm literally thinking and saying it to my friend, like for anybody but me, you know. This is probably one for the therapist, by the way.
No, this is basically what this podcast is.
People like a story. Yeah. People like a journey.
Yeah. Yes.
We don't really talk about things like breastfeeding anymore. Where we go, oh, and then this fucked up thing happens. Fuck me.
everyone loves. Yes, you've got your backstory.
I never saw myself like that. I remember the first person. I remember the first time I actually listened to it was when I went. This is such a random thing, by the way. And I hope she listens to this. I don't think she will, but if she does, I'll send it to her just in case. So then she listens to it. You can just cut this part out.
No, I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the admin of what's going to happen after the podcast that we haven't even finished recording yet. It's good.
So I went, I was in my second year of drama school, and I went along to this this show, and we had a Q&A with the singers on stage afterwards. And one of the singers was Keri Ellis. You know, Keri Ellis was in Wicked. She was like the lead in Wicked. We had a Q&A with her afterwards, and I put my hand up and I said, Keri Ellis, if I don't make it as a singer, what? I don't know why I sound like Kevin and Perry Go Large.
We all did when we were that age.
Yeah. If I don't make it as a singer, what should I do? And she was like, well, I don't know, but you know, you could always fall back on modelling. You're absolutely gorgeous. And I was like, what? And everyone in my class like turned to me and was like, shh, you know, because it's very competitive.
Yes, yes.
And my dance school teacher who had never ever said this to me, not even once, was like, oh, Carrie, we've been saying this the whole time she's been at college, you know, because they liked it, you know. Mm. Anyway, so Kerry Ellis was the first person who told me I should model and actually listen to it. And believe it or not, I bumped into her about 4 years ago at a Mac event. And I went up to her and I was like, oh, Kerry Ellis.
You remember me and my funny voice.
Do you remember the time you told me I should be a model? Well, I'm a model now, and it's my full-time job. And she was like, I remember you. And she gave me this big hug, and we have a nice little picture, and you can actually see it on my Instagram somewhere 5 years ago.
That's beautiful.
So that was really lovely. But I went through this phase of just being spotted lots of different places. You know, I kept being given cards, like in Oxford Circus. I was walking to Oxford Circus one day, and someone was like, hey, here's a card. And so, pick a card, any card, model card. So then eventually I was like, okay, maybe there's something in this. And I approached my first agency. I can't even remember their names now. Hughes Models, okay. Which everyone used to call Huge Models.
Oh, right.
Nicknamed Huge Models. And they've disappeared now. I think they've turned into IMM. And I just remember I was a cleaner, and I was working in restaurants, and I was doing all the things. Like, I was a shot girl. I was like, you know, I was that girl that would like £20 a shot, but it was actually just like fruit juice in the Mayfair clubs. I was doing everything to survive in London and going to my musical theatre auditions, because I skipped that part. I trained in musical theatre. I graduated. And then I was trying to get onto the West End. And so I was doing everything to like pay my rent and, you know, trying to survive in London and working like 110 hours a week. And making like no money and never sleeping. And then I remember going to my first casting, and again, this hasn't happened to me since, but I remember walking in and there was a panel of like four people, and they were like, wow, you're a star. You've got the job, you're hired. You know, again, this never happens to me anymore. Yeah. But there's all these very affirming things that kept happening in that time of my life. Just kind of, there was all these like signs. I never considered myself to be a model. I never even didn't even understand fashion. I didn't understand social media. I didn't ever look at these things. It was just not something I was interested in. So, but then the universe was kind of showing me the door. You know, I don't know if I believe in all the universe stuff, but I do believe that when something is meant for you, then if you're open, I think the things that are meant for you, if you get out there in the world, like, they'll kind of come to you. Maybe that's a little bit hippie.
I hope so. I just think that's really hard for people who've maybe tried and really want something and have tried and tried for years and years. Like, I don't know. I know people who've worked really hard and not got what they wanted. So,
but I think
does the universe just hate those people?
I do believe that sometimes the things that you think are meant for you are not right for you. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could want something so much. Like, I used to love this guy who cheated on me with 11 girls. And
11?
You know, yeah, 11.
Fuck me.
Do you know what? I was actually quite impressed. I was like,
how did you find the numbers? Because my ex-husband cheated on me, and I said, were there other women? And he said, yes, there were. And I didn't want to go any further. I just knew that there were lots of other women.
Did you go to like a football match and there was a whole team named after you? Was it like that? What the fuck?
It was, no, I just was a super sleuther. Like, it was Facebook. It was the days of Facebook. And I hacked into his Facebook and I found the girls and I asked him in person, what happened here? What happened this one? I matched it all up. I was like proper.
Oh, like Claire Danes in Homeland. Yes. Like, you had the map and the bits of string and like, oh, exactly. Right. He was in Sidcup on the 24th of June. Okay. Bit of red string. Oh my God.
That was me. So,
God. Did you ever contact any of the girls or anything?
Do you know what? It was so long ago. I think I did. Yeah. I think some of them contacted me and was like, just to let you know, your boyfriend's a cheater. And I was like, oh, thanks for the girl code, but that hurts.
Were they all Australian? I noticed you slipped into a little bit of Brisbane.
Yeah, they were all
absolute
Australian.
Hugs.
Even though we were in Essex, they were all Australian. Interestingly, he had a type.
did you find it helpful to know the number and to know who they were? Because I know you, Helen, you kind of didn't want to know, did you?
No. Oh, really?
Yeah. Because he had an affair with a woman for many years. And so then I said, you were so good at lying. Were there other women? And we were together 22 years, and he said, yes, there were. And then I was like, fine. I didn't go any. Because I just thought, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I mean, how much of a cunt, what level of cuntiness? And I just thought, is that... Mm. And I remember speaking to my therapist they said, you could find out, but is that going to hurt you? And what's the benefit for you? So I'm just sort of went, I don't know if I need to know that, but I think everybody's different in terms of how they feel like they have to move on or resolution or whatever. But yeah, that was that for me. I didn't want to, I think I was already so hurt anyway. I was like, I don't think I could be any sadder. Mm. Yeah. I don't know. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Cause some people need the resolution. Yeah.
I'm sorry you went through that. And
I'm
also,
sorry you went through
I need
that.
To
I'm sorry both of you went through that. Who knows what he's doing upstairs there now?
Yeah,
I need to update my people to kill list. So if you want to add his name.
Oh, yeah, no, fine.
But you did find it helpful to kind of.
I did find it helpful. I think, I don't know, better the devil, you know, I guess. But I've also been single ever since. So I don't know. I still have a lot of work to do around that. I think that it. I have some very unique ideas about monogamy, which maybe a lot of people wouldn't agree.
Oh, come on. No. Come on, let's get into it, Sharifa, please.
Mm. Really?
I don't know. If you want to.
Well, you know,
it's a safe space. We're not going to judge you.
No. Except for all the listeners who will be...
Oh, we're not going to judge you to your face now.
Oh, right, fine. I just think that you watch so many relationships, not... all there's many I know many happy couples who I don't let me word it correctly I don't know that monogamy is for everyone.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. I think that is okay, and I think that if monogamy is not for you, then you have to say I don't want the 2.5 children and this sort of lifestyle, and I don't want to live my life in that way, rather than subjecting somebody who is happy to do that.
But I think you've got to set the ground rules from the get go, because yeah. Otherwise it's about trust and respect, and no one wants to be hurt, and it's lies that hurt people, not the
exactly. Yeah. I just think that we are encouraged, especially in our culture, to live our lives in a certain way, and that, you know, the idea of success is to have, you know, like I say, 2.5 children and a successful career and a stable home and all of those things, but we don't all have the same value system, and I think we should remember that when we're making choices about love, because I know the amount of men, I think I learned this from working in nightclubs, the amount of men I would watch slipping off their, you know, wedding ring as they're having a conversation with me, because I'm the shot girl selling them overpriced shots, looking for an opportunity with anyone in the club. And I just think it's okay to want to be with more than one person, but don't drag somebody else through that. You know, I have a couple of friends who were in open relationships and they're very happy, and they've been doing it for years, and that works for them. And I don't see that there's anything wrong, but we seem to judge that so much more as a society. We seem to generally judge that so much more. It's so much more taboo to talk about the idea of an open relationship than to actually, but we'd rather like have people cheating on each other and breaking each other's hearts and doing all of that and dragging kids through that, then just saying, do you know what, once in a while I fancy going to a party and putting my keys in the bowl. And, you know, I just don't know. I mean, I'm single, by the way, so I'm just guessing, but I've just witnessed a lot of pain and a lot of hurt from different,
like Helen says, that often comes down to honesty, because Helen, I remember you've dated people who've gone, yes, I'm going to see other people,
yeah,
and that's a choice. Then they give you the information, so you can make an informed choice about whether you want to go along with that or whether you want to be one-on-one sort of thing. Whereas what happened to you before was, and what happened to you, Sharifa, is you weren't given the information, so you couldn't make a choice about what's going to keep my heart safe and what sort of companionship do I want.
And it was devastating. I remember finding out what happened, and I was so... I'd got myself a scholarship into drama school, and I come from not a very rich family, so, you know, I was so fortunate to be able to go to this school that was like 10 grand a year or something. So I got myself a scholarship, and I was so, like, I was so hardworking, so dedicated to my course. And as soon as that happened, as soon as my heart was broken, I couldn't even go to college. Like, people were calling me every morning, like, hey, where's Sharifa? You know, I went from being, like, the girl, like, the main girl in the singing shows or whatever, to then not even waking up for college on time because I was... It made me ill, you know, the mistrust and, yeah, like you say, thinking you love someone so much and then they do that and you're like, wow, like, I don't even know. It just rocks your whole world.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, if I didn't know that, then what else don't I know? And it just makes you question everything, I think. But I remember, like, waking up every morning and I was physically sick in the sink because I was so heartbroken. Like, that was the feeling of heartbreak. And I think that's probably another one for the therapist, but that's probably why I'm still single, because I don't think I've quite let anyone get that close to me since.
it takes a lot of time and a lot of trust. And I after, you know, I had a couple of years of dating, and I didn't think, I was like, this is fine, because, you know, if I don't have a full-blown relationship, then no one can hurt me again. Yeah. And so that was very protective. But then I met someone and I have fallen in love, and I'm like, oh no, he's forever. You know, that's right. But it's that took a lot. But also, I don't want the shit that happened to me and the bad behaviour and all that horrible shit to influence or break what possibly could be a very beautiful relationship. Yeah. But that's taken lots of therapy and lots of time. But I'm making a conscious choice. I'm like, well, I'm going to trust this person wholeheartedly, because that's the level of love, or that's the vulnerability, or that's what I want to experience, because I don't think I've had that before.
Yeah. Mm. And I think there's something, and I'm coming to a place after also lots of therapy. I have an amazing hypnotherapist called Meg, by the way. Shout out to Meg.
Is she mystic?
She is mystic.
Okay, cool.
She's very mystic. She's amazing, and she's changed my way of thinking, because we do have these little parts in our brain that can get stuck there and just keep telling ourselves that same story. I've had this story in my head for a long time of, like, you are unlovable. You know, just, and not even realizing when guys have been like, Sharifa, I want to go on a date with you. And I'm like, nobody wants to go on a date with me. And my friends are like, he literally just asked you. I'm like, where, you know, it's like, and this is what I've sort of learned from her, but also I've learned from friends and friends of friends. You have to remove the barriers. You don't have to look for love. You have to remove the barriers that stop love from getting in, right? Mm. And, I think it's better to love and... It's better to have loved... What's the saying?
Better to have loved and lost better than to live with the psycho the rest of your life.
Yeah!
It's a card I once gave my... And it made up. It was on a greetings card I gave my friend when she'd just been divorced and she was my bridesmaid. But
you should have kept that for your own, because that was really good.
Oh, well, I might need it one day.
Yeah. But yeah, I do think it's better to have loved than lost. And I would say very recently I've started dating for the first time in a long time. And I've started to say to boys, like, hey, like, you want to meet up?
Yeah. I'm proud of me.
Croydon. Going back to the open relationship thing, I'm trying to, like, I'm just going to be totally honest. Like, when you're saying all that, and I'm sitting here thinking, yeah, brilliant. And, like, yeah, why shouldn't... And, of course, we should all live our life how we want to live, right? And we shouldn't judge each other. And we should all fucking do our own shit and follow our own path. If you want to see loads of people and everyone knows about it, what's the problem? What's the problem? But there's my... Like, that's my brain. And then, like, my heart is going, I really like... feeling like I'm the best person for that person. I like it that, you know, I feel like this person's gone, you're enough for me. Everything that you are, all of your flaws, all of that. I'm not saying I want them to think I'm perfect, but they think that I'm so great that they don't need anyone else, because they're getting what they want from me, and vice versa. So... that's how my brain works. Do you think your brain just works differently, or do you think you're just more emotionally intelligent and developed than me? No. Or more secure in yourself? So,
the thing. I haven't actually been in an open relationship, so I have no idea. It's just, this is just my very single brain looking at the evidence I have of what I've experienced with love and dating, and then looking at what my friends have experienced, and my friends who've been through divorces and heartbreaks, and... I've just noticed so much infidelity in all of my friends' lives, and I've just thought, surely there's a solution. Surely there's a solution.
That's right, there is, Sharifa. Keep it in your fucking trousers. Yeah.
So, but I've never been in an open relationship. I'm just saying, would I be against it? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
You can't predict how you're going to feel when you meet someone who will... You know, I had preconceived ideas about what relationships were, and then I met somebody who changed those. But each relationship will be different, and I think you're just, you're very protective of your very beautiful heart, and that's fair enough.
Yeah. You dated people who you would have liked a one-on-one relationship with, and they didn't want that.
Yeah.
And again, I was never mad about that because I don't think this person's a bastard because he's been honest with you about what he wants.
Yeah, and that was very much established with the first, because I said, we're seeing each other every week. What's going on here? What are the rules? And they were like, well, I'm seeing other people. I'm like, well, I'm kind of seeing other people too. And there was never, and then it felt okay. I mean, it would have been, I liked them a lot, but then I was like, well, then I'm free to.
But I think if they had said, actually, okay, it's what's going on. All right, let's actually.
Then
let's
I would have done.
You would have
gone. Oh, of course, but it was good that the rules were established early on.
Yeah,
you know, because sometimes I go to his house and be like, there's an earring on the floor, and there's this. I'm like, but because it had been a step, I actually didn't find it. I found it kind of funny. I was like, just sweep up before I come. Yeah. Maybe. It was kind of funny, but I was like, well, if he came to my house, he'd probably see evidence of other people as well. But you know, but I think that's fine. But look. Anyway, but I wish you well because you are incredibly lovable.
I feel like
lovable.
Such a black sheep of the family now.
No, I'm sorry.
But also,
it's a process. And also, I'm give figuring everything it out. A go.
And also, how old are you?
How old do I look?
You're 31.
30, 12. I am 32 next month.
So you're 32, right? And we're 45. So we're obviously literally of a different generation. But also, I think we grew up culturally with different attitudes to sex and relationships. And like you were saying, I do think it's... I completely agree with you. It's great that people are having these conversations, that we need to be more open. And I'm trying to be less judgy. I'm also a 45-year-old woman who grew up in the 80s, Sharifa. I'm doing my best. That's all I can do, babe. That's all I can do. But anyway, if you came to me and said, it turns out I'm in an open relationship now, I wouldn't be like, well, we can't be friends anymore.
You're like, dead to me.
I love that you're...
But we're not in a friendship anymore.
No.
It's very open now. We don't need to see each other.
Yes, that's right. I love how open your mind is, and I think even at 31, I don't think I was as open to it as you are, and I think it's brilliant that you're just like, yeah, fuck it, let's...
Yeah, you know. I'm interested to give it a go, but at the end of the day, if I met someone who was like, you're my whole world, and I was their whole world... Then, you know, I'd probably be like,
yeah,
get your smutty hands off, bitches.
Yes. Get on the magic carpet ride.
You touch that him, slag alone. You die.
Yeah.
Again, don't know why I'm Australian.
Just gone Australian.
Let's see. I mean, yeah.
No, it's good for you.
It's food for thought.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It is, isn't it?
So let's go back to your career. So you go into modelling, and what size were you? Were you the same size as you were?
What she's saying is,
you know what's actually was like,
you were a curvy lady.
Were you a curvy lady? Yes, I was just like that Renaissance lady.
We all know the word we're not saying, Helen. That's fine. Sharifa's been down this road before.
I'm pussyfooting around all the things.
What were your measurements, Sharifa?
Excuse me, love, does that come in fat bastard, sir? Is that what you're aiming for?
Come on.
You know what I'm saying, Sharifa?
That was terrifying. If you look back at my early days of modelling, I remember one of the first brands I ever worked with was Boohoo.com. And my...
As I always say, it's called that because when you try the clothes on, it makes you cry.
And you're just feeling the pain through the whole, everyone who's experienced making the garment, which is terrible and a real problem. Mm-hmm. So let's not make a joke out of that.
Okay.
Please.
Yeah, I don't have any sweatshop based material. Let's just move on.
When I first started modelling, I was like a plus size modelling. I was probably sitting between a UK size 10 to 12.
And that was plus size.
That was plus size. 10
wow.
10 to 12. And I was, at the time, I was modelling, I remember I was modelling for like Evans, I was modelling for Boohoo, I was modelling for JD Williams. I remember all these brands. And I remember even like clothes not fitting me. And then being like, again, they're going to be Australian. I don't know why.
I love it. No, it's good.
Excuse me, but this model does not fit the clothes. She's too fit.
For a plus size model.
For a plus size model. And then then what happened, so in 10 years, I've seen so much happen in the industry because I'm signed in London, but I'm also signed in the States and Australia, as you know, and I've worked over in New Zealand. And I also work in Europe, so I'm also signed in Germany. And I've recently started working in Denmark, which has been so lovely. I love Denmark, by the way. And they put chocolate on their bread for breakfast.
Yeah.
That's like... Wow.
Everyone is hot in Denmark.
Everyone's hot in Denmark.
Everyone is hot.
Because they all eat chocolate for breakfast. But not just like chocolate spread, like an actual piece of chocolate.
Oh, that's just on fucking weird.
Oh, it's delicious.
No, I can't get with that. I'm judging that. Fuck you.
We're judging that together, Sharifa. I'm judging having chocolate
you
for breakfast.
You take your generational judgment away from your face. I'm making you chocolate for breakfast and you will like
Listen,
it.
Listen, in Thatcher's Britain, we couldn't afford chocolate. I don't actually like chocolate that much.
Yeah.
And I just want to go back to what you said about, so that they would, because I think we've talked about this before, just as mates, that they would talk about you as if, like, in the third person, as if you weren't in the room or you were, like, some sort of farm animal who couldn't actually hear,
yeah.
No, the saddle's not going to work on this one. Like, what the fuck, Sharifa? Yeah. Is that a common thing?
This is modelling. Modelling is a really interesting world to be in. Because
sounds like a shit world to be in.
But it's really odd because it's like... I guess it's like the golden handcuffs, isn't it? You know, you get paid really, really well for a day of your time or 2 days of your time.
I can see the appeal.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Someone's like, hey, like, come to set, we'll give you 10 grand, but we will literally pick you to pieces and make you feel terrible about yourself. But you sort of have like an out of body experience, you know, like,
okay,
you're so used to seeing that it's not about you. It's about the product and how can we mold this? Like, you know, the way that they used to make me at my first modeling agency, when they used to get me to change my hair and straighten my hair and wear different wigs for different clients, is like they wanted me to be ethnically ambiguous, because the more ethnically ambiguous I am, the more brands I could work with back in the day. So this is like the early days of plus size modeling, where they still only really use like white women of a certain size, and then if you're lucky they'd use a black or brown girl, but they had to really fit into the narrative of what a black or brown girl, what they want them to look like. So for me,
so
they
a specific shade of skin, for example,
specific kind of skin tones, like Eurocentric features,
right.
So they would really mold me like an ethnically ambiguous sort of Barbie doll to fit into whatever the brand wanted. So you become much less of who you are, and you just like become what the brand wants. And it definitely, if you look at some of my older modeling pictures, I don't even look like me. It's bizarre. Have you ever seen my pictures where I've got like straight hair and stuff?
I don't think I have, but I remember talking to you about it, and like you were very much told to hide the afro.
Yeah, like I would watch them on set lightening my skin tone. Or
In the pictures, you mean?
Yeah, in the pictures. You'd literally you'd see the photographer or editor just like lifting the colours up, and they would light me so that I look very pale, and my hair would be all these different types of wigs that again fit into this. So I don't even look like a black woman. I look like I could be Spanish or I could be something. And brands wanted that. And my agent, who interestingly, I was with huge models, and then I moved over to Models One. But I had a previous booker who is, I don't think a booker anymore, but she was a black woman. And she was the one who used to say, she always used to talk like this, and she was like, hi, hon. And she said, we don't want to see your afro because it's nappy, it's messy, it's this. Like she was almost internally racist, you know, but not because she was trying to be hateful, because she wanted to book me jobs. And she knew that for me to book jobs, I have to look more Eurocentric and I need to look more ethnically ambiguous, because that's what brands wanted. But they wanted like a plus size girl who wasn't actually plus size, who was brown but wasn't actually brown, somewhere in the middle. And I'd like to say that we've moved away from that, but we haven't really.
Right. Yeah, because that's what I was interested to hear in your 10 years of... Because, you know, obviously our social media is curated when we, like, we choose who we want to follow. So I would say I see a really lovely, diverse range of people representing fashion, all that sort of stuff, but... I was interested to hear your thoughts about how you feel represented, or you all...
Yeah, the big companies and the brands are still curating it in a racist way.
I think that brands... how do I word this really easily? Where we live in a predominantly white country, and where we have a fashion industry that is dominated by a global beauty standard, our global beauty standard is that of a... thin white woman. And that's not just me throwing my toys out of the pram as a not thin white woman, saying it's not fair, we don't get picked, because I certainly do get picked. You know, I do get picked, but you can literally look at the, you know, look at the covers of Vogue covers. I mean, you could pick out only very few covers where they have different, you know, anyone that deviates from this beauty standard. All your covers, like Elle, Vogue, everyone. So the fashion industry is mostly white. It's mostly white people behind the scenes. It's mostly white faces. And when they're not white faces, if you go on a set, you'll still see 95% of the people behind the scenes, makeup artists, hairstylists, photographers, are still also white people. So they're viewing things through a very white lens. Therefore, if they have a black model, they will maybe choose a black model with more Eurocentric features, or they'll say, maybe we can like straighten that black girl's hair, or maybe we can braid. I mean, one thing I always have is, like, we'll only work with Sharifa if she braids her hair, because in so many people's view, like, Afro hair is not, it's like, even though Afro hair is how, like, your hair is down, my hair is Afro because it's just down. It's not a style, it's my hair. But they'll go like, oh, we don't want the Afro style. But I'm like, it's not the style.
Yeah. It's just my hair.
It's just my hair. But they'll say, but we don't, because they then kind of stereotype and pigeonhole that one Afro look to, like, you see the same sorts of models or people with Afro hair modeling the same types of things. They're fun, they're jumping on a trampoline. You know, it's, you won't really see it in a beauty campaign that much. You won't really see it, like, on the runway. Like, you'll be hard pushed to find, like, too many Afros in London Fashion Week. They want it sleek, they want it pulled back, they want it, you know. So this is just fashion in lots of ways, but I think that there's a condition existing in the fashion world as a black or brown woman, in that you have to fit into the Eurocentric mold, in a way that I've not really seen white people having to do. Like, I'll have to come to set with my hair already styled in this braided look or in whatever look, whereas my white counterpart will sit down and get their hair done on set. And this is changing, but it still very much exists. So it's like that thing of having to work twice as hard for half as much, or having to work harder, or, you know, I'll go and spend a day getting my hair braided and I won't get paid for it. So they'll say, go and get your hair braided and sit for 8 hours and pay for the hair. And I'll still have clients who make millions and millions and millions of pounds arguing my agent about whether or not they're going to pay the £300 fee for me to have gone and done that. Do you see what I mean? So it's like a
whole other layer of shit that white people stand.
It's like a strange inequality, but it's also just down to how black people are represented in the media. Again, it's like, we can exist but only conditionally in the media. It's the same as people want black artists but they don't want black politicians, you know. Like, we exist in the world, but we can only exist in certain ways. It's quite hard to explain unless...
No, I think you've done a really
amazing job. I appreciate it. It's hard for me to empathise because I haven't lived it, and I'm sitting here, to be honest, going, fuck me, you know, you've got all this shit, Sharifa. Like, you've got the fucking modelling shit of people talking about you and saying you're fat, and then you've got the racism shit, and then you've got the microaggressions and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not just sort of go mental or just throw your hands up and go, fuck it, I am going to go work in Sainsbury's?
Because I'm getting paid. I think...
But represent, like you, it's important you're there.
Yeah. I think when, like, the thing that, one thing I've done over the years that I've really tried to stick to, and it's probably not been the best thing for me, is that I've said to my managers, like, I've fought so hard to keep my natural hair in so many campaigns, and I've lost the battle a lot of times. Like when I was on the cover of Elle magazine, I had my hair braided, and you know, that is 50% of that is fake hair, but it's better to be there than not be there at all. But when I was on the cover of Runner's World, and when I was on the cover of Women's Running, I had my hair completely natural, and I remember the messages from like parents or young people, and they're like, I had one message from a woman that said, I have a six-year-old daughter, and she kept telling me she wanted to straighten her hair. And she was like, and she saw your pictures, and she just said, I don't want to straighten my hair anymore, mummy. I want to have my hair like that lady's.
And you saved me an absolute fortune and a load of hassle. Yeah. Thank you so much.
And I just, that for me is what matters, because when I grew up, I never saw anyone like me.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's so important to feel like you belong somewhere. And also that has an impact on your worth. Has an impact on how you see yourself and what you feel like you deserve, or where, you know, where you sit at the table, you know.
Yeah, and I think, don't get me wrong, I never ever want to shame black or brown women for changing their hair, because it's a huge part of black culture, you know, like braiding hair, twisting hair, wearing wigs. It's a big part of black culture, but unfortunately I do think a lot of it is rooted in oppression, particularly like, I know I have black and brown friends who have said, I literally cannot look at my natural hair because it makes me feel sad. I don't feel attractive. And these are the images that have been pushed on us by what black and brown women should look like. It's a beauty standard that we're all living up to, black, brown, white, whatever. We're all living up to this beauty standard of sleek hair and great skin, and everyone is subject to that. But if you look back, you know, let's just go to slavery a little bit for a minute. You know, we have had to learn to assimilate in a white society. And one way that we assimilated, you know, you have Madam C.J. Walker, who invented the hot iron, and she was super famous for that. And it was pressing your hair, and it was dressing in your nice clothes and looking as neat and tidy as possible to assimilate to a white society. And that's how we coped. And it's also something we were encouraged to do. Like there was a... I think it was in the something ridiculous like the 1800s. I might be getting this wrong from the date, but in Louisiana they had this law called the Tignon Law, where women, black women, were basically told that they had to cover up their hair because the white men found them too attractive, and they like kept cheating on their open relationships. And they kept cheating on their girlfriends or wives or whatever, with these black
11
women.
Other black women, yeah.
11 other black women, always. And so they made them cover up their hair. So they made them cover up their hair with Tignon scarves. And so that's how they then started making all these scarves into beautiful different things. So the history of black hair is so, so deep. And I mean, I could go on, but black hair is very political, and it's also something that we've kind of been, yeah, encouraged, I think, to adjust. There's been loads of like horrible court cases about kids being suspended from school for wearing their hair in natural hairstyles, or I had a friend who was a lawyer once who has, you know, natural hair, and was told, don't wear your natural hair into the court because it's not professional, you know. So that's why I think when people say, oh God, why can't, what's this thing with black hair, and why can't we touch your hair, and why are you getting so upset about it? Black hair has got so much wrapped up in it. So then when it's reducted down to just going circling back now, I've managed to find the link. Then when you circle back to a white creative director or a white producer telling me, hey, we don't want to use Sharifa with her natural hair, can she go and braid that, or can she go and put a wig on, it almost feels like another little layer of oppression.
Sure.
You can have this job, you can have this £15,000 job if you exist in the way we want you to
if
be
you
seen.
Comply with
yeah. And I've heard the argument before of like, okay, but I have to dye my hair, or I'm graying and you know, society doesn't accept that, or I have to straighten my hair because it's frizzy. But it's not quite the same comparison.
No, because it doesn't have the same historical context, yeah, as you've just very brilliantly placed it in for.
And it's also never the difference between having losing a job and not losing a job. Right. Like, I have literally been told, do not come to set unless you will braid your hair. Whereas I've never heard a white girl or boy be told, unless you change the texture of your hair, you can't come to work. Because they will just do it for you when you get there. Then they'll do whatever. Mm. But it's not like a case of... You know, and even still, they're not going to be like putting their hair into afros, otherwise they can't come.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's not reversed. It's not like the mirror.
No.
No, exactly.
Not
right.
Quite the same. But yeah, I rambled on.
No. It's fascinating hearing you talk, and you know, thanks for telling us about all that shit. Because I think, like, again, with the open relationships thing, although obviously we've had a massive falling out over that, it's good to talk about this shit, isn't it? And thank you for.
I am not in an open relationship.
I appreciate that's work, though, and I appreciate it's work to talk about this shit as well. So, cheers.
Yeah, it's. I'm getting to the point. I've been modelling for 10 years, and I'm definitely coming to a part of my career where I'm like, you know, I'm so grateful to model. But if the job and the client isn't right for me, I'm just not doing it anymore. And yeah. I model on my terms now, rather than always being somebody else's doll.
Mm. I'm going the other way. I'm going to make Helen perm her hair before she's allowed on stage with me.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the...
My hair not crimped, you're not coming.
My hair has a lot of fans, especially when I was up in Nepal. It was like the fifth member of the Beatles. It was another member of the. Oh, it's just mental.
I remember seeing that on your social media.
It just wouldn't calm down.
I loved it.
Calm down.
It was amazing.
Washing with the hand soap, that may have had some kind of contribution to that.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, I feel like, look, we've done fidelity, we've done racism. I feel like it's time for Scummy Mummy Confessions.
Yes,
we've gone deep. Let's get shallow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
what I came for.
When I emailed Sharifa, she said, I've got many, many stories. So I feel like we should start with you.
Okay, I went through this period of my life where I just always had like a bad belly, you know?
A bit farty or a bit pooey.
A bit pooey.
Yep. A bit squidgy.
A little bit pooey. Well, let's take it back.
Okay.
I was, I want to say I'm 7 years old.
Okay. Oh, I love this. We're going, do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
Okay. Seven-year-old Sharifa.
I'm 7 years old. It's summer. It's hot, right? I spend the whole summer, as you do when you're seven, naked. You know? Because it's hot, right?
Yeah.
Just in my knickers, right?
And
I remember, like, trying to always find ways to skip school. Mm-hmm. And I think one day I'd managed to find a way to skip school. So I was, like, running around the house all day, half naked. And my sister, who's now a doctor, would never, ever skip school. Like, school was her favourite.
That's why she's a doctor.
She came home from school one day. And laid down on the sofa. And she always lay in the same, like, patch on the sofa where the sun would, like, shine through the window, which is very nice. So anyway, I'm running around in my knickers. And I also went through this phase of, like, always farting on her. I just thought it was hilarious.
It is funny. Farting is inherently funny.
It was funny. I'd see her, I'd fart, run off, because I'm, you know, I've got a low IQ and she's smart. So she's like, well, I'm better than you. I don't know. She's got a pipe now.
She's smoking a pipe.
I'm better than you.
Very vivid image here. It's marvellous.
Anyway, I was off school pretending I was ill. Not ill. But maybe I was. Because I went over to her laying in her patch of sun and I thought, I've got a really good fart. I've got a great fart for Salima. She's going to love this one. So I like crept over the top of her and, you know, I thought I'm going to make it a good one. So I'm going to pull down my knickers.
Oh, Sharifa.
I'm going to pull down my knickers all the way. So I pull them down, took them off each leg. Did a little swirl, threw them across the room silently. So I'm now poised above her as she's laying in her patch of sun watching TV, 3 p.m. Hands over my mouth, like holding in the laughter because I thought it was so funny. And I go to squeeze out like the best, most epic fart ever. But what happens is instead of a fart,
oh God,
it's just the most
no
silent stream. like pale yellow.
Oh my
god. Oh, like days. Like mustard out of a squeezy
like
bottle.
Like mustard out of a squeezy bottle. The whole way, like no, but it doesn't really make a sound. And I'm looking down and I've noticed that she hasn't noticed a thing. She's still relaxing and she hasn't heard it. It was so silent. Silent but deadly. There's a whole entire back on her stomach.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like a horror film.
It's just a puddle of like mustard, squeezy mustard, yellow pool of poo. And I looked down and I was like,
oh,
she hasn't noticed. I might get away with this. I thought maybe I'll just creep off now. She'll never know. Oh. If I just leave, she'll never know.
What do you mean she'll never know? She hadn't noticed,
so I thought I'd just leave now.
Oh my god.
Then I thought I'm gonna have to admit it. How am I gonna admit it? So I went, Salima. And she was so relaxed. She went, yes.
Oh no.
I said, does your back feel warm? And she went, yes, the sun is... Oh, the sun is warming your back. That's lovely.
Oh, dear God. Oh, my.
That's lovely. And I was like, I don't know if that's the sun on your back. And then, like, she slowly, like, you know, gets a little whiff, turns around. As she turns around, like, all the poo, like, slides off her back and onto
her. Oh, Sharifa.
I'm completely naked the whole entire time, like just standing over. I was like, "Yeah, I think I was. I think I actually am ill." Turns out I was ill. I wasn't even cheating. I actually
You're sick in the fucking head.
Actually, did have terrible diarrhea. And
what did she say?
I think she was just. She just froze with fear.
Yes.
She was like...
It's not every day someone poops on you.
Yeah. But her whole entire back, the back of her head.
Oh, God!
Just covered
your poor mother.
So,
your poor
but
mother.
But you know what? The thing that she was most upset about...
What?
Was the fact that it was her only school uniform. So she... What was she going to wear to school tomorrow?
Oh,
her favourite thing was school. And her least favourite thing was me. Well, so yeah,
what can I say? That is, Sharifa, that's one of the worst stories I've ever heard.
Isn't that amazing?
I've got to be honest, Dan, I can't. I was rattling around for a scummy mummy confession, Ivor, and I don't think I can top shitting on your sibling's back. I can't beat that.
It was an accident.
No, it was not an accident.
It was. I thought it was a fart.
Yeah.
No, right. Okay,
I thought it was a fart. I thought it was a slide.
I think it was in legal terms. I think we'd call that manslaughter.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
It's not murder.
Yeah.
It's legal, but not wise.
I've actually never officially apologised to my sister, so I will say sorry.
Well, now's your chance.
Yeah. She's going to be furious. Yes, that this is on a podcast.
I'm furious on her behalf.
Yeah.
And then she became a doctor so she could cure incontinent children. Helen, wow. Have you got one or are we going to leave it there?
I was just going to briefly mention that I spent until about 3 o'clock on Sunday in my pyjamas and my boobs are quite long and floppy. I describe them like they look like sausages that have been ironed. Raw sausages have been ironed. Anyway, when I thought I'd do, you know, when you like run out on, you know, to change the bins or something, but you do that sort of like bouncy walk. So you, as we say on stage, so it makes you invisible. So I thought I'd just go pop, 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 take the recycling out in the front garden. But as I was doing that, because I wasn't wearing a bra, my boobs clapped. Like they literally were flapping, but I couldn't stop because I thought I've got to get to the recycling. So my boots were just literally like applauding me going outside.
Like a football rattle.
I was horrified.
It's nice to be appreciated though, isn't it?
Yes,
that's time to time.
My body was literally applauding me, but it was
thank you.
And then I hopped back in because I was so horrified. I was like, this is a low moment. Flappy, old flappy tits.
Well, there you go, Sharifa. So much to look forward to.
Yeah. Wonderful. Do you know what? It's already started. I think it started when I was like 20, in my 20s. I was like, why are they so much lower this year than they were the year before?
Oh, no. Ellie doesn't have that problem. Going. She's so perked.
Oh, I'm waiting for the day, though, one of these days. I don't think so.
I've known you for 10 years and your boobs have only got... I feel like they've only got better.
Well...
Now I'm looking at your boobs.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm sorry.
Listen, let's finish your podcast. Yes. We'll all take our tops off. I've always wanted to be in an open relationship.
Peace! Starts now!
Three women about to get their tits out. Down the stairs. Oh, well. Sharifa, you've been such a wonderful guest, my lovely. Where can people get more Sharifa?
Where can you find me? I'm at Sharifa J on all platforms.
Oh, well, there we go. Yes, as always, we're on tour. Go to scummymummies.com for dates and tickets.
Oh, we're going to be up and down the country. And we're booking, would you believe it, even looking at 2025.
People. Who knew? For fuck's sake. All these jokes, isn't it? 10 yeah. more years.
Come on.
Yes.
Marvellous.
Hopefully your boobs hold out until then.
Oh, look, I'm considering getting a boob job, to
You'll be
honest.
You'll be carrying
one. No one will notice. I'll just magically one day be like, something's different about Helen. What?
Can you not get...
She's in an open relationship.
A valve put in, like a pair of armbands, and that would be good, wouldn't it?
If you I think you can.
Pop them up and let them down on Sundays or whatever.
You can.
Asking for
I don't want massive boobs. I just want sort of like... I want some... to be round and not flat.
Yeah. Oh, thanks again, Sharifa. Thanks lovely, lovely to have you on the podcast. Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. I do... sounds a bit hippy-dippy, but I do believe that the...
Hello.
Sorry, that's my husband.
I hope it's your husband.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
This is Sharifa. That's Pete.
Hi, Pete. I think I've seen your face many times on the internet.
You might have seen Sharifa's face on the underground on the Fitbit posters.
Oh, yeah, really?
Face and body of Fitbit.
I love it. I look out for them.
Yeah. Oh, they're gone now. But you can always email in and tell them to put them back up because they pay me.
Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right.
Get out of the way.
Thanks, darling.
I just go to the furthest point of the house.
Yeah, that's right. I always say when we have models round, get in the loft. I don't want you near her. Don't trust you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by ACAST and available to all audio platforms.
ACAST helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. ACAST.com